In this episode of Movie Allies, we're going to talk about Mortal Kombat 2, Pressure, Tuna, and Boy George and Culture Club. It's time for Movie Wallahs. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wallahs is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter. In theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. And goodness me, we are going to bring you a bumper episode of Movie Wallahs today.
And we're back together again, and I feel like I say that every episode.
I was going to say it, and then I'm like, we say that every episode.
No, but we are back together again, because we did miss Yazdi.
We have we did. We had a big hiatus.
Yeah, before that, we missed you guys.
Yeah,
we
that's traveling. Right. Yeah.
But I think all of our major travels are, at least for the time being, they're done. So we should be firmly in Tinseltown.
Yay!
With our
back
feet,
in the groove.
With our feet tightly.
And more planted. Movies are coming out. Like, they're coming thick and fast now.
Well, it's summertime, yeah. So, summertime. It should be when all
soulful.
Of that. That was very soulful indeed.
That was soulful, yes.
I love that song.
Dulcet tones of
Yassi. Yeah. Okay. I feel like Yassi's singing is getting better.
Well, it can't get worse.
Correct. Considering I'm tone deaf, yeah.
It yeah, worse, I would do karaoke with you again. That's how much faith I have in you.
Oh my God. I can sing that song. I love that song.
Yeah.
Ask and you might shall receive.
Yes.
And you might, and you might, you may.
You may not be ready for what you receive.
So this is kind of like a catch-up episode and a current episode, right? Where we've been a little bit late in recording.
It is. And in amongst one of these podcast releases, Rashmi and I have also been to Tribeca Film Festival 2026. Yazdi, I think you were able to catch a couple of movies from the fest online.
I intend to, yes.
Okay, so we'll definitely bring you some coverage from Tribeca. That may come before this podcast or after, depending on production.
Yes.
I'll leave that as the statement of the
yes.
day.
Yes.
Okay. So, because we have four movies today, we're not going to do a movie pick.
Boo-hoo.
One of these four should probably end up on your list. Well, maybe. Let's see what we think about it.
Yeah.
So, let's get right into business. We have Mortal Kombat 2, Pressure, Tuna, Boy George and Culture Club. Is that the order of
it
the
is.
Day? Okay. Let's then begin with Mortal Kombat.
Okay, so the fan favorites champions is now joined by Johnny Cage himself, and they're pitted against one another in the ultimate battle to defeat the dark rule of Shao Kahn that threatens the very existence of the Earth Realm and its defenders. So this is directed by Simon McCoy, and it's written by Jeremy Slater, Ed Boon, and John Tobias. It's based on the, my God, I love this game. It's not Capcom, right, Joe? Mortal Kombat?
No, it's famously not Capcom.
That was Street Fighter,
it was
which
the
is
bloody,
also coming out as a movie.
It was the bloody, violent alternative to Street Fighter, right. Which was cartoon violence. But Street Fighter 2 took over the world in the late...
It did, 90s.
Early 90s.
Yeah.
Mortal Kombat was introduced as another fighting game, but its claim to fame was they used photorealistic graphics, so they took pictures of actors and then there was blood and guts and finishing moves and gore everywhere.
Yeah.
It was a terrible game.
But we spent many an hour, Joe, you and I, playing Mortal Kombat against each other.
I'm Team Street Fighter. Street Fighter was much more elegantly balanced as a game, but Mortal Kombat was definitely more of a button mashing one.
Yeah.
You could play it without a lot of learning and practice and still do well. And it was just like, you liked chopping heads off.
I did.
Stabbings and...
Yeah, and I love the finish him, all of that. So I am a total fan. So this stars quickly Adeline Rudolph, Carl Urban, Martin Ford, Tati Gabriel, and a whole host of others. It's got quite a big cast. So I was a huge fan of Mortal Kombat, the kind of the revamp, which came out about 3 years ago. And so this is the second installment of that rebranding of Mortal Kombat. So,
right, so this is the second iteration of the movie
correct.
Franchise. So
correct.
There was one that came in the 2000s, I think.
Very early 2000s, yeah.
Which and you also
which I actually loved
enjoyed,
the first. Yeah, I did. I loved it.
Famously had the two unlimited.
Correct. I love that.
No, yes.
Yassi's like, I don't...
like, let's what get are these people talking about?
Yeah.
Like, I'm on some other planet.
You are, I think so.
Yes.
Okay, so Yassi, given you are not kind of the kind of know more about this world as much as Joe and I love this world,
right.
What did you think of this movie? And remind our listeners, did you love the first installment from this franchise?
Okay, so...
That's a lot.
Like you said, I am not a Mortal Kombat super fan. I hope somebody explains why there is a K for combat and not C. But anyway, I've never played the video game. And so my take on this film is, you know, that from that of an outsider. And my take is this. It was entertaining. I kind of enjoyed it in the moment. The script I thought was pretty abysmal. I wasn't prepared for the hyper-violence, but again, I haven't played the game, even as you guys were explaining. I'm like, why is this so gory? What's going on?
Hmm.
And then I realized, oh, they are fully leaning into the R-ratedness of this movie. And again, it comes from the video game, and everybody curses a ton. will I remember this movie next Thursday? I won't. But while in the theater, I dug the fight scenes. I think they're the reason to watch the film. So, yeah, I think it was kind of fun.
Hmm. Okay, Joe.
I don't. I had a hard time. This just felt incredibly lazy to me.
Mm.
One of the things about the original franchise, even though it wasn't movie greatness, was it did have a lot of Easter eggs for the movie game, for the video game fans. It was, you know, very much kind of fan service. This first reboot was adequate entertainment. This one... taken a very lazy step back. I think it's so derivative. There's not a speck of originality here. I think the special effects and all of the visual effects and the drama, it just felt horribly lazy to me. So for me sitting here as, you know, video game movies are kind of hard to do anyway, right? I mean, and this is a franchise without a compelling backstory. It's very much in the Bruce Lee, Enter the Dragon, Game of Death, all of these kind of, you know, mythic tournaments, but they amp it up with, you know, magic and, you know, realms and nonsense. And this was just a dose of nonsense that made me irritated. I thought, do better. This is a valued franchise, and sure, people are going to come watch it because of the myth that is Mortal Kombat, but as a movie, do better.
Yeah, I'm with Joe. I was really disappointed, especially given I liked the 2021. I just looked it up. 2021 was when the first installment came. And they had a bit of imagination in terms of coming up with a origin story for Sub-Zero and Scorpion, right? So that was kind of interesting in that last one. And so I was hoping for more of the kind of origin stories of where these characters came from. Instead, we just got ham and cheese, more ham with this one. And I wish that they had taken a bit more time to work on the story elements. And agree with you, Yazzie, some of those fight scenes were incredible.
Mm-hmm.
They were really good and quite imaginative.
Correct.
And I really, really enjoyed that. But I was really disappointed by the story. We're getting a fire alert.
Yeah. So here's my thing. For me, it was too jarring. The tones were very jarring because it's set in this epic Asian fantasy world.
Right.
Which, you know, I'm thinking Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Exactly.
I'm thinking, you know, Raising the Red Lantern. I'm thinking, you know, those kind of, you know, wuxia movies. But one, everybody curses and it's super gory, so that doesn't go well with it. And then I think the other part, which I actually commend them for trying, but they failed gloriously at it, is this whole Johnny Cage character, which is played by Keith Urban.
Yeah.
Who is so meta, like he is constantly... kind of like, oh.
Keith Urban is the country singer.
Sorry, Carl Urban.
Yeah.
All the Urbans. Are they related?
I don't know. Okay. It's a good question. I will try and see if I can find out.
But Carl Urban, I mean, he plays this kind of very tongue-in-cheek kind of, you know, failed Hollywood stuntsman hero kind of thing. And there's a lot of humor in it. Sometimes I laugh, but the other times it just felt very forced. And so I kind of almost felt embarrassed. I know they were trying to be... you know, that portion of the movie, they were trying for it to be a little bit meta, but it just didn't. I think in better hands, they might have been able to pull it off. Like Tarantino can do that, you know, any Friday of the week. But, you know, this, it didn't all come together. But the fight scenes were fun.
It's because, in part, Mortal Kombat, the characters don't really have compelling backstories. They kind of created characters and built stories around them. And Johnny Cage, they're like, well, let's put in a Hollywood martial arts guy into the game, right? He can be the cheesy American, you know, cliche, you know, has-been type character. And I think...
Who finds the will to defend Earth, well, right? That's...
No, in the game, they just kind of throw him in.
I know.
In the movie, they have to create that premise. And so it all just feels incredibly forced. And... Mm-hmm. And some of the mythical characters in the game, you know, there's dark side and light side, but here they're all kind of jumbled together, and you don't really. So the whole thing script wise was just empty calorie.
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to be grumbly about this one.
Yeah.
It reminded me a little bit of that animated movie we saw, the most money that any animated movie has made, the Chinese one, Asia 2.
Yes.
There was so much lore, and you couldn't put your... Because bad guys became good guys became bad. I was like, my head was spinning, like, what's going on? Who is what? What's the fourth realm? What is this?
Right.
So there was some of that year, too. And then the other thing also is, I'm not giving anything away, but the movie kind of ends with the remaining Mortal Kombat heroes saying we're going to go and, you know, save the other people. So, in effect, there's some major characters who die in this, but it never kind of counted much for me because I knew they're going to be resurrected. Now, duh, of course, that's what happens in a video game, right? Somebody dies and you resurrect them. But in a movie, if somebody's just dying and somebody is able to resurrect them, then there's no emotional heft to it. So that there's that too.
Yeah, I think that's what was missing was heft, emotion, and depth. And again, I know it's a video game.
Yeah.
I know it's a video game. But what I'm trying to say is if you're taking the opportunity to make this a movie and you've already done the work a little bit for the first one, it didn't feel like that far-fetched to make this a little better. And so it kind of really increased my disappointment. So I can wind this one up. I really hope they don't do a Mortal Kombat 3 unless they're going to get a whole rewrite. I think it's time for this franchise to go away and maybe be rebirthed in a few more years when someone can really do it properly and spend the time creating a really good story-based line. For me, 6 out of 10. And that's even being generous.
5 out of 10. I think if you're at the back of an airplane, you have nothing else to watch. You could do worse, but it's... Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, same here. You know how I feel about this. I mean, it's the plot basically exists as this kind of substrate to happen between fights. They didn't put a lot of effort into that. And I think that's what's most disappointing to me here is that it's not that the movie's bad. You kind of go in there expecting it to be, but it's so uninterested in trying to be anything more than adequate. It's like, it's frustratingly like satisfied with where it sits. And I'm like, Do better. These are great characters to have fun with. You can make
That's
anything
what I'm saying.
Up.
You can make anything can make up because anything they don't up. Have a history, so, right?
5 out of 10. Boo.
Okay. Wow. I scored it the most.
That never happens. I think there's also a kernel of they're trying to make this movie about the female lead a little bit, but then they kind of peter out towards the end.
Katana's journey.
It's Katana's journey, and then it's like they all show up. But okay. Anyway, we have beaten this horse.
Yes, and
a lot.
Apparently Keith Urban and Carl Urban are not related, although they are both from New Zealand.
Huh, who knew?
Who knew?
A lot of urban.
Yeah, urban legends in
urban
New Zealand.
Urban legends in New Zealand, yeah. good. Okay, let's move on.
Next movie on our list is Pressure.
So I'll introduce that. So Pressure is written and directed by Anthony Maras, and it was a name which was unfamiliar to me, and I looked him up, and the only other movie that he has done that kind of I recognize is the movie Hotel Mumbai, which we had all seen a while back.
I think we had seen it at TIFF,
Toronto International Film Festival.
Toronto Film Festival, yeah.
And so this is the latest movie from him. It has a pretty good star cast. It has Andrew Scott, Brendan Fraser, and Kerry Condon. I love all of those actors. And then Chris Messina is here as well, amongst others. I like Chris Messina. Okay, The one-liner for the movie from IMDb is that in the tense 72 hours before D-Day, General Dwight D. Eisenhower and Captain James Stagg face an impossible choice. Launch the most dangerous seaborne invasion in history or risk losing the war altogether. The co-writers are the director Anthony Maris and writer David Haig. I did not see this. I actually have heard a few people say good things about it, including our friend Jeannie.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you guys think about Pressure?
So who knew that weather systems could be so interesting or entertaining? Hmm. It's a lot about the technicalities of weather because D-Day had to occur at a certain point in time.
Hmm.
And so a lot of the movie is kind of taking really dull facts about weather systems and trying to create a narrative which is about what risk would we face if we sent our men in a storm to Germany, right, to the coast of Germany. So I found that quite interesting, and it was done with enough pace and tension that it kept my interest. And of course, it's wonderful to see Brendan Fraser, and I love Andrew Scott and all of the people you named, Yazdi. So I think it's a good movie. I wouldn't say I was highly entertained by it. Like, I didn't come out going, that was an amazing movie. But it was good. It was good.
Yeah. I mean, look, this subject matter, pun completely not intended, but the subject matter is quite dry.
Yeah.
You know, it is about the meteorological considerations of the D-Day landings. And, you know, it begins or maybe ends with the quote from Eisenhower, which was, you know, what was one of the biggest contributing factors to our success on D-Day? So we had better weathermen than the Germans, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it was a line kind of said in jest, but the truth of it was the D-Day window was very, very hard to predict. Mm. We had an unpredictable system in the Atlantic at the time. And this movie explores effectively competing theories in meteorology, because remember, meteorology back in the day was nowhere near as sophisticated as we have now, with like satellites everywhere. You know, they had to go from like charts,
balloons,
and models and math. Yeah. And they had to try and figure stuff out. And it was very much an art, not a science. But it was also a science more than an art. So there was this tension between, like, how do you do this? And the consequences of making an error in judgment could have been catastrophic for the Allies.
Yeah.
We all know how D-Day worked out. Mm-hmm. So we don't have any surprises there in terms of how that worked out. But the considerations and the specific timing of D-Day and how that played out from this perspective was absolutely fascinating viewing for me. You know, they took very dry material, but exceptional performance from Andrew Scott, who's, again, one of my favorite actors at this point in time. He just delivers. Frasier had to play a little bit more of a caricature, American General Eisenhower. He was, you know, he was the big bravo, kind of almost a cliche cigar smoking general, but, you know, so he had a bit more work to do to make that character believable.
Yeah, good point.
But I mean, it was wonderful. Yeah. And yeah, everyone else was great. So I had a great time in this.
So does the movie actually reenact the D-Day Normandy invasion? I mean,
it's not Saving Private Ryan.
Okay.
But we get
elements of that beginning.
We get to see what happens as they landed.
Leading up to it.
And it's quite ambitious. It's quite ambitious in the scale that it does it with. The production on this movie is phenomenal. The costumes are beautiful. You know, it recreates bombings in London and it's quite ambitious in its... I think it wants to be very epic and jingoistic in some ways.
Mm.
For me, it didn't quite get there. I think if this was like a July 4th submission, like I think they've timed it a little bit, little bit too early. If this comes out like July 4th, and it had not been called Pressure, and it had been called something else,
Pressure seems
it might do better. Pressure is I understand why it's called Pressure, because they're in a pressure cooker and the pressure of the weather systems and blah blah blah. I get that. It's kind of a clever play on it.
Yeah.
But they could do a little bit better, and this would really elevate it.
Yeah, I mean, it's all set in war rooms. So in many ways it feels not quite the same thing. Nuremberg was in courtrooms.
Yes.
But it has that same kind of
feeling
where all of what transpires is tension between characters.
Very talky.
It's literally about status and positioning of characters and, you know, both people being correct, yet there being a decision to be made about what to do from a military perspective, you know. Again, the stakes of the D-Day landing were so high for the Allies, and if they missed their window, the entire direction of the war could have changed. We've seen this explored in other ways, but this particular angle was fascinating.
Yeah.
Which is amazing because it was the start of the end. D-Day was the start of the end of World War II.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean,
it just goes to show, I mean, all the different elements, you know, that go into, you know, the way that history ultimately plays out. You know, these things could turn one way or the other on the smallest of things, and one of which could be, will it rain tomorrow or not?
Yeah.
You know, like that's literally the difference between them being able to make the D-Day landings and get up the beach and not.
I mean, as we're talking about it, Joe, it's a well-made movie.
Yeah.
It's a well-made movie. I would recommend this.
Okay.
I would give this one a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm kind of there too, but I'm going to lean towards the 8 just because when I think about how they made this interaction interesting, it really was quite an accomplishment. Again, I think it could have been a stage play. This movie's all in the dialogue. Oh, okay. That's where all the tension is. Yeah. We don't actually need the D-Day scenes, if you ask me, because that's not where the drama
you could do it. Could do it in the background.
I really like this. I'm going to hold this up as one of my better movies of the year so far. And we've had a good year.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. So what's your score?
I'm going to give it an 8.
Okay, good.
All right, moving on then. The next movie in our list is Tuna.
Not tuna sandwich.
Yeah. Right, the person who tunes.
I've got to do full American and pronounce my R for the tuner.
I was saying water to everybody during my trip and nobody was understanding.
Because it's water.
I know.
Water.
Your American accent is...
Americanized, yeah. Okay, so let me introduce Tuner. Tuner is written, directed, and produced by Daniel Rohr, R-O-H-E-R, who looks like he's in his early 30s. And these days there are a lot of movies in theaters from very young filmmakers. And, you know, we can talk about that separately. But... Rohr started his career making a lot of very well-established documentaries. He made Once Were Brothers, and then the Oscar-nominated documentary Navalny.
Oh!
So he's the director of that.
That was a great documentary.
That was a great documentary. And then he also, in 2026, has released this documentary called The AI Doc, or How I Became an Apocalyptimist. A person who believes in
apocalyptimist.
An apocalyptimist.
That's a portmanteau
of apocalypse and a person who optimist. Believes in us. Yeah, an optimist. So, but he has also made fiction. He made a movie called Blink in 2024, and then Tuner actually came out in 2025 in the UK and rest of Europe, and it's being released in the US only in 2026. So Tuner, again, has a really good cast of two leads. Dustin Hoffman is here, as is Leo Woodall, the British actor Leo Woodall. The writing credits are Daniel Rohr and Robert Ramsey, and the one-liner is that a talented piano tuner who suffers from hyperacusis discovers an unexpected aptitude for cracking safes, turning his life upside down. So again, I've seen the trailer for this a couple of times when I've been in the cinemas. I don't get to see Dustin Hoffman a lot.
Mm.
Leo Woodall is a very agreeable screen presence. So did this a good concoction make? Joe?
It did indeed, yeah. I mean, I'll start right off the bat by saying, you know, this is a really, really entertaining journey of a movie. And... It's a cliche crime drama where, you know, good people get dragged into bad situations. Rashmi, you'll probably say this because I think you mentioned it not long after, but there's a Safdie brothers-ness to the way that tension is built and that characters end up on this slippery slope of from which they cannot escape, right? They're pulled into this vortex of criminality and mess that's really tough for them to get out of without doing anything necessarily wrong. But look, long story, it's really well done. Some wonderful sound design, especially, it reminded me in many ways of like the inverse of the movie with Riz Ahmed, the sound of
metal.
In this movie, we have somebody who has exceptional hearing to the point that they have to protect their ears because, you know, loud sounds can cause major distress for them. We get to experience that through Leah Woodall's performance and some really great direction and sound design. I thought this was super.
I love this movie. Mm. I love this movie. You know, Leo Woodall, he really impressed me in Nuremberg. He was the soldier who has to kind of escort the characters from jail and the Rami Malek character. And there's something, like you said, Yazdi, very agreeable about him on screen.
Yeah.
He's mesmerizing.
He's also in the latest
Bridget Jones,
which just got dumped on Hulu, but in UK and elsewhere it was in the theaters.
Yeah.
I saw it on the plane. It's very good.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, yeah.
So I think he has to carry a lot of the movie on his shoulders, but I love that this is a kind of heist movie, as Joe said. The tension is palpable. I just wanted to get to the end of the movie because my heart was like in my throat the entire time. It creates really, really good tension. Dustin Hoffman is great in this. You can't quite figure out what's going on, how it's going to end. There's this central kind of like a little bit of a love story in the middle that kind of raises the stakes for the character. And you know, sometimes you can have that kind of romance that becomes the reason for the stakes for that character having to do what they have to do. Mm-hmm. And that can become a little bit hammy sometimes.
Right.
But this plays it so well. Mm. That was really interesting. I love that there are these bad guys who are really bad. It's got some bad violence in it.
And they're kind of cliche bad.
They are cliche bad Russians, but they're not Russians, right?
Right, but it's got that same kind of ineptitude as we saw in like something like Anora.
Yes, exactly. Right. That's what I'm saying. They're like the Russian, the archetypal Russian baddie, but they're not Russian. So there's a lot going on, and it could easily have become cliche, but it plays really well. And I agree with Joe, the sound editing is phenomenal. For the first time, I actually got to understand what people with amazing hearing they go through.
Is that a thing they've made up or that's real?
I don't know.
Mm. I think it's true. People say they have, what's it called? Perfect pitch.
Perfect pitch.
You can have someone.
No, this is more than that. This is somebody who has extreme sensitivity.
Correct.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he literally has to wear
headphones,
earmuffs, noise cancelling headphones, or whatever it is.
They call it hyperacusis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So whatever it is, he's very sensitive to sound.
Yeah.
In the script, he is the tuner, as in the piano tuner.
Yeah. And that's a great backstory to that.
Because he has, you know, this perfect pitch.
Yeah. I really like this movie. This is one of the good movies of the year so far for me.
And sorry, you may have been talking about it. I was looking something up, but there is a little bit of a plot misstep that was almost unforgivable.
Oh, really?
Okay, yeah, well, maybe you didn't feel that same way, but there's for a plot that's set up as cleverly as this one is to pull us into its world, there's a coincidence that happens later on in the movie that
You
know, every movie has coincidence and contrivance. But this one was almost unforgivable.
Because, it's almost a Scooby-Doo
because
moment.
When I saw it, I rolled my eyes. But because the movie was otherwise so well crafted,
okay, I know which movie you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm like, I'll give you a pass for that because you've entertained me so much, and let's see how, what you do with it from here. And they resolved it. So
yeah, I know what you're talking about. It was a Scooby-Doo moment.
There was just a moment of like disbelief in an otherwise plot, which could have been implausible, but was handled so well that it became plausible. And we went on its journey.
Yeah, yeah.
But then I'm like, my eyes should not have rolled at that moment. And I was like, oh, it took me right out of the movie. But I mean, that's a nitpick and a little bit of a misstep.
Yeah. You know what it was? I think they ended up writing themselves into a corner, and that was the only way they could get out of that corner. And like you said, fortunately for them, it worked. It worked.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree with you. For me, this is easily an 8 out of 10.
Yeah, so, this was excellent stuff for me too. It's better than Pressure, and I gave Pressure an 8. So by logical argument, I should be giving this a 9.
Give it an 8.5.
But I refuse entire integers only.
Come into my world. step into my world.
I've noticed you manage quite well on Letterboxd, though you only have a 5-point. Scale.
Joe's been studying.
Oh, have you been reading my reviews?
No, I haven't read them recently, but I'm like, Letterboxd only has 5. Yazdi's not arguing for quarters in that one.
No. This is true. You guys are fools. You guys let me do it.
No, we don't, but anyway. So,
it's like the problems of our 10-point scale. I'll stick with my 8, but really, this is super fun. It really is. It's a really good distraction of a movie.
Yeah,
you might not quite believe it, but it's totally worth your 2 hours.
Yeah. And you're right, Joe. I think you made a good observation. It's got that kind of Anora feel, but it's more elevated.
Yeah. I disagree with that statement.
Yeah, I mean, I loved Anora.
I thought Anora was fantastic.
Anora was fantastic.
It lives in the same universe.
Yeah.
You know, those characters could
but
bump
is
into
it
each
as
other.
No, like batshit crazy.
No, yeah. Right. No. It's right. Not batshit.
No. But there are moments in there where you can either see that inspiration has been taken or there is perhaps, you know. Yeah. Anyway, so I feel like they're in that same.
Yeah, and right. Joe, good observation that it does live in a Safdie brothers adjacent world.
Okay,
is it John or? Josh or
Josham Benny.
I know, which is the one who did
Josh. Josh did.
Josh did Marty Supreme.
Yeah. It's that same.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, kinetic.
Right, like you can't breathe and you feel.
Is someone slipping down a greased
correct
slope? Right.
Like, yeah.
They're on it through no fault of their own, and whatever they do to try and scramble out, there's no traction.
They keep getting pulled down. Down.
It's like no.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you've convinced me. I've added it to my list of movies to watch in the theatre.
Totally.
Yes, definitely watch it in the theatre, Yazdi. We watched it at home. I think we got to watch it at home.
We did get to see a screener of it. In fact, you know, I was too busy to watch it, but within the first couple of minutes of it coming on, I was like, okay, we're in good hands here. This is going to be worth my while. And I immediately was pulled into, like, right, laptop closed, whatever I was trying to get done. I was like, I'm going to watch this movie instead.
Yeah.
Okay, final movie.
Yes.
So, Boy George and Culture Club. So I'm going to introduce this very briefly, just from IMDb and talk about top billed cast and crew. So, this documentary explores the rise and fall and legacy of one of the defining acts of the 1980s. More than a music documentary, it's a story about fame, identity, friendship, romance, and reinvention through the lens of one of pop music's most distinctive bands. Director is Alison Elwood. The movie features Boy George, Roy Hay, Mikey Craig, John Moss. And through interviews, archival footage, and reflections from the band members themselves, the film charts Culture Club's rise from the new romantic scene to worldwide fame, while examining the personal relationships that shaped both the music and the group's eventual struggles. Rashmi,
I'm the only one who got to see this. Yes.
Oh, you didn't see it either.
Yes. And I'm the perfect one to see it because I am the 80s lover.
And
a big fan of Culture Club. I'm the one who loved music of the 80s. I still listen to music from the 80s. It defined my childhood. These were, you know, formative years in my life. This is a great documentary. It's totally a VH1 behind the music, Raw, Exploration, Four Talking Heads, which are the four members of the band. And we really go deep about how they formed. But most importantly, I think the question on everyone's lips at that time was, is Boy George having an affair with John Moss, who was the drummer? And there was much made about it in the 80s, but people, you know, it's a different time and there was denial, but then there was kind of like inference to it. This is Raw. This is the two of them telling you, yep, we had a torrid love affair, and it absolutely did shape the music and the lyrics of what came out, right? And so it's now people who are in their 60s reminiscing, reflecting, narrating about a time in their life with nostalgia. There's a lot of really good footage from the 80s. There's fashion. You know, it's interesting when I look back on the 80s that there was this whole era of new romanticism, and I was a complete fan. Spandau Ballet, Duran Duran, you know, then Wham, and all of these big 80s bands. And there were men wearing makeup. But Boy George, George O'Dowd, really was quite influential in the way that he presented himself. Yeah. So it's a really interesting documentary about time that's passed, about a movement in music, and then about how the band was formed and the role they all played. And then, you know, obviously in a band, Boy George is the one who's the most famous.
That's what I thought. I thought Culture Club was just another Boy George, name and then, for Boy George. I didn't even know there were three other members.
Yeah, well, okay. That's the point, right?
Right.
And then also, I like this element of how four people who are equal in a band ultimately don't become equal because the lead singer becomes the star, popular, like you said, Yazdi.
Right, right.
And then how that affects the other band members. And then you've got this torrid love affair going on and you can't share what that love affair is. Mm. And the other person in the love affair doesn't even know whether they want to be in that love affair. Right. So it's all about all of those things wrapped up in a really good documentary. So if you are of a certain age, I would say if you are like 45 and older and you lived through the 80s.
Also not me.
No, you little whippersnapper, you. Then this is a great documentary to watch. And the music. The music is fantastic. To watch those live Come a Chameleon and all of that stuff is phenomenal. Love this documentary. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And all those songs, now when you see it with the context that he wrote all those lyrics about John Moss, who is the drummer. So imagine you have to turn up day after day after day.
Right.
Bit like us. I'm pointing to Joe, not to Yazdi. You know, it's very interesting. Very, very interesting. So it's better than a VH1 Behind the Music. Definitely worth a watch. I'd give this one an 8 out of 10.
Okay.
Almost a 9. I'll give it an 8.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a good watch. Really, really good movie.
Is it going to be streaming?
It is going to be on, I believe, Prime.
Okay.
HBO. Let me check. I should check.
But it's not going to be in theaters.
It will be in selected theaters, but it will be on a streaming service very shortly if it isn't out already as well.
Okay.
And I have to say, Boy George now, you know, there was that whole issue of the drug taking and the heroin addiction, and he looks really good now.
That's what, I mean, I've seen him on the Graham Norton show. Yeah, and he doesn't look like he's aged at all.
Yeah, he does. So and the others have.
I don't know if he's had...
Definitely.
Things done with his face or whatever.
I think he's changed his teeth. Yeah. He looks amazing.
Yeah.
And he's become a big club DJ now.
I was going to say, he's had like second career in the noughties.
Yeah.
As a big time kind of Pete Tong, Calvin Harris, like club DJ. Got an amazing following. So, and he's a very agreeable character, Boy George. I love the way he speaks. He always speaks very honestly.
Yeah.
And I forget, like, you know, the time that he came to be. Yeah,
he was a man wearing a dress.
Very difficult being, you know, a non-binary.
Yeah.
And like you said, early on, sure, there was Kiss, and sure, there were other people who were wearing makeup and so forth, but he was the most extremely, he kind of embraced the feminine aspect of his non-binary persona.
I don't know if he's gay, non-binary,
and I don't even know he would describe himself.
That was like It was such a talking point at the time, because I mean, I was very young when he came. Yeah. I was like, is he male, female, something in between? Is he just a cross-dresser? Like, it sparked a lot of conversations back in the day, and I can't imagine how brave it was for him to be authentically who he was back in the day. Like, it's quite amazing.
Yeah, I would definitely say, I think both of you would enjoy this documentary.
Okay.
Yeah. And many, many of our listeners who I know are of same age as us, you know.
Okay.
Great. Awesome.
All right. That's all we've got time for today. Mm-hmm. Thank you again for listening. We have more movies coming up. We all hope to see some of the big summer movies that are coming up, and we'll do our best to podcast about them as we get to go. We're all grounded for a while, I think. Mm-hmm. I think none of us have any travel plans coming up, so that should enable us to get on to more of a regular production release schedule for the podcast. So thank you, as always, for downloading Movie Wallahs. We are also on YouTube. Check us out there. Or just listen to us. We're happy either way. Until our next episode. It's too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.
Movie news and general banter. Movie Wallahs.